I mean, I don't. I know, that sounds weird, but like yeah. I'm falling in. I feel like I'm growing up.
We're at that age, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm gonna be 34 in October, and you're probably.
I'm 28.
Oh damn, you're young yet. All right, you're not even in your 30s.
I got an old soul because I like healthy cereal.
Welcome to the American Grown Podcast, hosted by Austin Sullivan. The American Grown Podcast will focus on people from different walks of life and their journey to where they are now. Now, turn up your volume and settle in for a great episode.
This is the American Grown Podcast, recorded inside the ColorTech Creative Solutions Studios. This episode is brought to you by these sponsors.
Navigating the college journey can be overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. At College Knowledge Foundation, we're here to guide students and families every step of the way. From choosing the right college to crafting standout essays and understanding financial aid, our virtual sessions and free consultations provide the tools you need to succeed. Join the growing community of students and families who've discovered how to take control of their college journey. Visit College Knowledge Foundation to learn more, book a session, or explore our free resources today.
Are you in the mood for some mouth-watering Italian dinners, homemade bread, cheese steaks, hot subs, cold subs, salads, sides, and of course, delicious pizza? Look no further than Angelo's, located at 1032 South 5th Ave, Lebanon. Call 717-273-8579 to place your order now. Haynes Auto Detailing, run by owner Josh Haynes, offers a professional service that is sure to have your vehicle shining from wheel to wheel. My wife and I both trust Josh with our personal vehicles, and believe me, with two kids, the back seats tend to look like a hot mess. But after a trip to Haynes Auto Detailing, the vehicles look better than brand new, both inside and out. Message Haynes Auto Detailing on Facebook or call 717-679-3673 to get your vehicle looking right today. Are you in the mood for getting out of your house this evening? Head over to Boyer's Tavern in Rexmont, PA. They have appetizers, soups, salads, wings, mouth-watering burgers, sandwiches, and many other entrees to choose from. Proper food and drinks made by slightly improper folks. Head over to Boyer's Tavern today or give them a call at 717-450-4063. In this episode, we have country singer and songwriter Jake Maish. Jake, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming in and being here and being a part of the podcast.
It's an awesome time, man. I got put onto your podcast a while ago, and I've just been itching to get on it.
Really? So who was like the first episode you listened to? Do you remember?
Cody Tyler.
Cody Tyler. Shout out to Cody Tyler. We're good buddies,
so it was like, oh, he's on this? Oh, man, he's getting some good sound bites going on here. It's like, cool.
Oh, so that kind of put the American Grown Podcast on the map for like the local country singers, you think?
I think
like
so,
with
yeah.
Cody Tyler? Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, because I had Cody Tyler on, and before him was Jess Zimmerman Band.
Yeah.
With Jess, and mm-hmm. She's the one that was like, you should reach out to Cody and all these other people and like get them on. It'd be really cool. So that's awesome. I appreciate you listening, and now you're here. So first off, I want to thank you for your service, you know, your time in the Navy, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so what years, if you don't mind talking a little bit about it, and what did you do in the Navy?
Yeah, so I was 2016 to 2021.
Okay.
And I was a hospital corpsman, so right when COVID hit, that was when I was, like, trying to wrap up and calm down, and it just went 100 mile an hour. It was one of those things where COVID hit, and then us in the healthcare, especially military healthcare, we were one of the first people where they were like, everybody needs to get the vaccine. I was like, ooh. Okay, and you know, everybody has their own opinions on it, but it was like, you have to get the vaccine. We get the vaccine, and it was definitely a rough time. It was one of the first couple batches, but then they told us all hop on the USNS Comfort and go up to New York for that whole thing.
Wow, so you were up there?
Yeah.
Stationed, I think I remember seeing like the boats and stuff. Like, you were right up in there.
Yeah.
That was a crazy time, because no one knew, right? Like, no one knew how severe, how serious, you know, it affects everyone differently, but...
Yeah, they shut everything down. Like, when you're on a ship, how you kind of keep your sanity is, like, you know, you got the galley, so you got your meals, and then if you're lucky, you have a gym on the ship. The Comfort is a big old ship, And it's not a gray hull, which is like when you think Navy ships, you're thinking of like a gray hull.
Okay,
the Comfort was like a remodeled oil tanker that's like a hospital ship. I'll be honest, I don't think it gets a lot of respect because it's called the Comfort. It's, you know, compared to a gray hull, you definitely got it easy. But when there's that many people on a ship and they shut the gym down and they shut the galley down, it's like,
what do you do?
They brought like these dry ass, like boxed up lunches.
Really?
Yeah, man. It was like, you know, a dry turkey sandwich and chips. Of course, you know, you just get what you get, and people are trying to trade, and then they're like,
yeah,
stop trading. They're like, you're spreading germs and stuff. You just threw us in a big incubator. Like,
right.
You're sleeping 300 dudes to a room with a, what's the word? Wow. A virus that gets spread through, like, the air and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Sleeping 300 to a room, and they actually had to figure out a different way to prevent that because they were like, okay, then maybe this isn't such a good idea. So they were able to find a hotel that clearly wasn't making any money because everything was shut down.
Yeah, true.
So I guess they got a good deal and rented out like a whole hotel and gave everybody their own like rooms. So it was a really tough time and like the work part sucked. But at the end of the day, you hopped on a bus and went and stayed in your own hotel room in New York City. So
that ain't too bad.
Yeah.
I guess.
It was a weird deal.
Yeah.
That whole couple years was weird. And how quick it was. It was like, you know, you go into work one day and they're like, hey, report down to building A or something like that. You're going on the Comfort for however long they're going to be up there. So really nobody knew what was going on.
Just a wild time.
Yeah.
So what was that like for you personally being, you're a country guy, you know, what was it like being in the big city in New York and then being in such tight quarters and not being able to like you said, work out or go see people and, you know, and go to lunch with them and stuff like that.
You know, you just kind of, if there's one thing the military taught me, it's how to take an L and go about my day. So pretty, like, there's things you're not going to like about it, and they're going to make you do what they're going to make you do because, you know, when you're in the military, you got a choice. And as far as being in the big city, I'm from Glen Rock, PA, which is about an hour north of Baltimore, so I've been to Baltimore plenty. But going to New York, it was even weirder because you can see over Times Square from the hotel we were at. And it's nothing going on. Like, Times Square is dead.
Oh,
like, there's
true.
Not a single person walking the streets.
Yeah.
I think the only people that were making money at that time were how many people were doing DoorDash.
Yeah.
Because everybody was ordering Shake Shack to the hotel.
Yeah.
So it was pretty awesome. But, I think just us. So I was a surgical tech. So we had all our ORs to actually operate in. And the initial plan that we were told going into the whole thing was, we're going to New York. There's a lot of COVID stuff going on. We're going to take the patients on board that aren't, you know, COVID positive so that we can take care of the regular patients.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So the hospitals have room to take COVID patients. We got a lot of backlash for that. And when I say we, I don't mean like lowly enlisted people. I mean like, you know, the CO of the ship or whatever. And I forget whoever was in charge of putting us up there. They got a lot of flack, and eventually it turned into, okay, well, we'll take COVID patients. And, of course, everybody on the ship was like, yeah, we're all getting COVID.
Right, yeah.
We're in a big incubator with a bunch of COVID. We're all getting COVID.
It's just going to spread. It's just going to happen.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like chickenpox. We're all about to get it, and we're all about to get through it. And
yeah.
There were some patients that came on that were in such, I think the mortality expected rate was around 90%, and I think we got it down to about 65 or something.
Oh, wow.
So there was a lot of lives that did get saved on the ship, but it was kind of like we didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
That's
impressive though. So like you're just real quick and then we'll kind of get into, you know, your music career and everything, but like what was your day to day like during COVID? Like what was your role? Are you seeing patients? Like what did you do?
No, so
yeah, educate me.
No, you're good. So I was a surge tech. So my role on a regular day not with COVID is I get to the hospital, I'm basically the surgeon's assistant. So, okay. Like, I'm in on the surgery. Like, so when you're watching Grey's Anatomy, I'm not the surgeon, but I'm one of them people that are, like, passing the instruments and setting up the sterile field and stuff like that. So, on a normal day, I'm doing that for, you know, 8 hours, plus whatever collateral stuff and Navy stuff I got to do on top of that. But when COVID, when we were up there on the Comfort, it was like every day was different. You'd get out of your rack, you'd go have a dry-ass breakfast somewhere. What we usually did as techs anytime we were on the Comfort was we didn't prep all the ORs. Like, ORs are supposed to all be sterile and stuff like that. But when there's only so many patients to see, and, you know, there's only so many surgeons. Let's say we have 10 ORs on the ship. We're only using six of them. So three are storage for, like, you know, big, like, surgical microscopes and stuff. And then one we turn into, like, a lounge.
Okay.
Or I think during COVID, we turned two into a lounge. So it was like, you know, y'all just kind of sit in an OR in, like, a lawn chair. Somebody brought a hammock, and on the sides of the walls of the ship, they have, like, bolts and stuff like that, so you can secure for sea.
Okay.
So he would, like, go set up in a corner. You put it on one part of one corner and one part on the, you know, kind of catty corner it.
Yeah, yeah.
And the dude was, like, 6'5", so he couldn't sleep in his rack.
Oh, wow.
Like, he wouldn't fit in a Navy rack, so he got in trouble for sleeping in a hammock in one of the ORs.
What's he supposed to do, though?
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Like, you just want him to bunch up.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so he did that, but he would always just kind of hang out in that during the day, and that's what we'd all do.
Wow, man.
But, yeah, so I'd get up, have a dry-ass breakfast maybe in one of, like, the ORs like that, and then we'd do sweepers every morning for, like, 30 minutes. You clean the ship, and then every day was just a little different, you know? And we'd have a lot of surge techs, but...
Mm-hmm.
Not, you only need one surge tech per surgery, and, you know, some of us would get sent up to sterile processing to, like, clean stuff that was used. Some of us would get sent to, like, ICU to, you know, if a patient had real bad trouble breathing, we'd put, like, a trach tube in, and we just have to oversee that.
Oh, wow.
I shouldn't say oversee. We got to pass the trach tube while the surgeon did it. But, yeah, everything was just a little different. It was just a weird time. I read a lot.
Did you?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like what? Like what were you reading?
Well, now I read, like, a lot of Star Wars, like, novels and stuff.
Fantasy
like
stuff,
that.
Yeah. I love Star Wars, like, Lord of the Rings.
Sci-fi.
Okay.
Yeah. But at the time, I think I was just reading, like, I like historical books. So, like, one was on, like, Norse mythology, and one was on, kind of blanket it. It was a book by Jerry Rice about, like, the whole history of football and stuff like that.
Okay, okay.
And then that was also around the time that Tiger King came out. So, like, you get to
Yeah.
So, like, you'd go outside the hull, on the hull of the ship, and you'd actually get some signal. You'd download all of Tiger King. And I got really into this show called The Last Kingdom.
Oh, I never heard of that one.
It's a Viking show.
Is it?
Yeah.
Netflix?
Or? Yeah.
Okay.
I got really into it. It was just a sick show. Because it was that or Tiger King, and it was like... Man, all this weird shit's coming out at one time.
Seriously, yeah. Tiger King blew up. I remember watching the first couple episodes with my wife, and I'm like, if it wasn't for COVID, I don't think it would have been nearly as popular.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but it was like everyone was stuck at home, and it just, it was the perfect storm for the Tiger King. Like, that series was wild.
Oh, yeah. And, like, at least 20 times a day, you'd hear a random person be like, that bitch Carol Baskins.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. Let's, Jake, let's take a quick sip break. This sip break is brought to you by Garage Beer. From the garage to the cooler, whether you're on the golf course, just got done cutting your lawn on a hot summer day, or spending some quality time on the grill, grab yourself a Garage Beer. It's just beer-flavored beer. But what first kind of drew you to country music, and then who are some of the artists that... you know, inspire you?
So it was definitely what my mom played in the car. So my mom played a lot of different stuff. So it was like, I'd get on the countryside, it was like, I'd get a ton of Toby Keith. Like, I grew up on Toby Keith, Kenny Chesney, Keith Urban. And then on the other side, she listened to like 96.9 with like Elvis Duran in the morning.
Yeah.
To get the pop fix in. And then she was a massive Michael Jackson and Boys to Men fan.
Okay.
So it was, I kind of got it from like all different avenues.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, I guess something in me always attached myself to, like, the Toby Keith, Kenny Chesney, Keith Urban, stuff like that. So when I learned guitar when I was, like, I think 8 years old is when I started learning. And as far before I knew that, I was writing songs, just, like, melodies, not being able to play nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I took, like, the primer book for piano. So, like, the one that literally just teaches you how it's laid out. And, like, this is a C chord. Boom.
Yeah.
And I didn't get anywhere past that. But it was enough to, like, okay, I can use this to write some songs. And at the beginning, there's no coherent songs. It's words I'm throwing on. It's like, oh, this is a love song. And I remember the first song that I ever wrote is called Get Out and On. And I have no idea what it means. It just sounded good.
Really?
To like, my 7 or 8 year old self.
Yeah. Wow. At 7, 8 years old, because I feel like you know, at that age, you know, kids are like, at that age, I remember like video games, you know, you'd be doing video games or out throwing football or something, but you were literally like writing songs and strumming on a guitar.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was doing all of it.
Yeah.
I remember I bought the Bionicle video game for PS2 for my cousin. I felt like I was a king.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man, the PS2, that's going back. Wow.
My dad bought me a set of like cheap golf clubs and some of those practice balls that are like foam with like a hard center.
Yeah.
So I could just hit it in the yard. So like he tried getting me in golf for a while. It didn't really stick, but I will say, so driving up here, we passed, I don't know what it was called, but coming from the turnpike to here, it was some golf course. And I was like, that's the golf. I only ever went to a course one time to golf, and I passed that course. And I'd never in my life knew where it was.
It's probably maybe Fairview.
Yep, that was it.
Yeah, Fairview. Yeah, because you would pass that coming up from the turnpike. Yeah, that's a good course.
Yeah, I was telling my wife, it's one of those things where like you know what it looks like when you're there, but I couldn't put it on a map. So we passed it, and I was like, oh my God, I've been there.
That's wild, like a flashback.
Yeah.
But you actually been there. Whoa, wait, is your wife, is she here?
Yeah, she was out in the car.
Well, she could come in.
Oh, she didn't want to intrude. She's like, when you go on podcast, you look at me.
All right.
And it kind of breaks the conversation. I was like, that's fair. Good point.
Okay, all right. Now I feel like we got to like, all right. I feel bad. She's way out of the car. Well, make sure you take a drink out to her or something then.
I will. Thank you, man.
Yeah, seriously. So, gosh, so from like a young age, writing songs, even though you didn't maybe know the melodies or maybe had an idea of what you were writing, but you were coming up with stuff. Your mom, heavy influence into the music that you listened to and you grew up on. But how would you say your Navy career and experience has helped, like, influence your music?
I guess kind of how I was saying how it kind of taught me how to take an L and go about my day. Like, it's making my Navy experience, I feel like, made me okay with writing a song I'm not proud of and just being a bad song and be like, just get that out. Like, sometimes you just have some ideas that you're wrestling around with it, and you're like, just put it on paper. It's out there. It's done. It's not the best song, but I can always come back and, like, I call it, like, Frankenstein some lyrics. Like, I could grab that line for a different song, but at least I got that idea out. I wouldn't say I have a lot of, like, Navy stories. Like, I think people assume because I was in the service, I have, like, all these cool, like, military stories. Not so much.
Well, the COVID stuff, I mean, that's pretty apocalyptic, you know, that's pretty crazy, you know. For somebody that was just at home, you know what I mean? I didn't, because to see New York completely empty would be wild. But, like, while you were, you know, trippy. Stationed up there, were you still writing and singing and stuff? Like,
That was actually a really good time for writing and singing because, like I said, they put us in, like, a hotel where it was, like, they didn't want anybody spreading anything, so everybody got their own, like, one bedroom. So it was pretty cool. So, like, I could actually just... And I brought my guitar. I learned that when I go on a ship, I need to bring my guitar. The first time I went on the Comfort, it was down to South America, and I brought my guitar, and they ended up... I played guitar for 6 hours a day, I think.
Oh, wow.
At med sites, like, entertaining the locals while they waited in line. And that kind of taught me, like, oh, well, I should probably bring that. But I would sit in my hotel room and just get songs out, and I was getting really into Springsteen at the time. That was another thing I read. I bought a John Fogerty biography and a Springsteen autobiography. So I read both of those. And then I think Springsteen had like a Bruce Springsteen live at on Broadway or something.
Yeah.
Which is ironic because I'm looking down at Broadway and I can play that on my phone. But yeah, I think just, you know, you kind of get into a mindset when you're in that situation of you're just alone with your thoughts and then you get inspiration like Springsteen, who I love his writing. Not the greatest singer, but he sings with conviction. He makes you feel it. And yeah. I think that's my biggest thing when I'm performing. Like, I don't just want to go up there and be like, oh, that was a nice song. Like, I want you to feel what I felt when I was writing this. And I think Springsteen has a big part in, you know, that being my writing style. And when I was in COVID, that's really when that kind of, I guess, made its way into my songwriting.
Yeah, I would think as a listener, because I can't sing or write music to save my life, I wouldn't even attempt to, but like going to concerts and things like that, it is always the emotion, right? And that's what I think if you're a good singer, good songwriter, good actor, whatever it is, director, is you want to bring that emotion out of people that, you know, not only are they paying the ticket to see you, but if you can move them in some way, whether happy or sad, like that's what it's all about, I think, you know?
Oh yeah. And I me and Cody Tyler have talked about that till our lung, till we're blue in the face. It like 10,000 streams is cool. 100,000 streams is better. But at the end of the day, it's just a number. Like when you go and you play a show and you can actually like connect with people and make them feel something, it's like, dude, there's no better feeling than knowing you made somebody feel like that. Unless you made them feel like shit, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But right. Like when I, we played the Abbey Bar in Harrisburg about 2 weeks ago, me, Cody, Adam Yarger from Adam and the Armadillos, and Jillian Smith. I played a song I wrote called It Takes a Village, which is like my dad passed away when I was in fourth or fifth grade. And that was just kind of like something that I'd been mulling over. Like I wanted to write a song as a way of saying thank you to everybody that kind of stepped up to be a figure in my life after that happened. And that was the song. And so when I played that song, obviously I'm crying.
Yeah.
Like I don't know if this was before we started recording, but I was telling you about, you know, when you're on stage and all eyes are tuned in and it's quiet and like you just, there's a moment in time where everybody's locked in. And I tried to set the song up and I told the story about my dad passing away. And then while I'm singing it, I'm getting choked up. I can see my wife sitting like right there in the front. Yeah. She's getting choked up. I'm like,
right.
God. And then after the show, we're driving home. She was like, I don't think you know. You had everybody crying. Like she's looking around. She's like, this person was crying. This person was crying. This person was crying. Everybody I could see was crying. I'm like, and it gave me goosebumps because I'm like, man, that's awesome.
It hit.
I make people cry.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like, I know what you're saying. Yeah. It's like, but they've probably all been through something in their own lives. And then that song, you know, they can put themselves in that song, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is like, I think that's the end goal in anything. And like you said, sure, the numbers are great. You know, it'd be great to say, oh, I got 1 million streams or 100,000, this or that. But at the end of the day, like it's the impact you make on the people that are around you or the people that are listening or the people that are watching, I think that is bigger than any number. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. And then even if you can't directly relate to that either, maybe you know somebody that, you know, went through something like that, or you're just an empath and you see me up on stage crying and you're like, he's crying, I gotta cry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I know I get like that when I'm watching a show. I'm like, man,
yeah.
Something heavy hits. You're like, this would never happen in real life, but God, does it hurt.
It gets you. It gets you going. Oh my gosh, yeah. And I'm big, like my wife says, I'm very emotional, I guess, for a guy. But it's like, you know what? Hey, there's nothing wrong with that, man. If you feel like crying and if it hits you and you can relate to it, there ain't nothing wrong with crying if you're a guy, if you're listening out there. Oh, don't be afraid to shed a tear.
Don't be afraid. I cry all the time.
Yeah. like professionally, you're going after this, right? Your solo career kind of, I guess, took off really 2022. You had left the military at that time, I think it was, right about there. So what was it like, you know, to transition out of the Navy and really start full time chasing your dream?
So when I was getting ready to leave, like, you know, I had 2 months of terminal leave saved up. So my contract expired from the Navy December 7th of 2021. But my terminal leave started 2 months before that. So I was able to come home and just take leave for the last 2 months of my service, which was awesome. Highly recommend that if you're getting out soon. But everybody was like, what are you doing when you get out? And I'm like, I'm going to go to school and I'm going to play music. And they're like, what do you mean? And I'm like, I'm just going to, well, main thing, I'm going to school. So my GI Bill is going to give me something to live off of. And, you know, that's going to afford me the opportunity that I could try playing some venues and stuff. At the time that I got at the Navy, my wife was working at a country club. Excuse me. And they had live music. And I had sent her a cover video of me playing Country Club by Travis Tritt. And the girl that books the music, she showed it to her. And the lady was like, oh my God, we have to have him. Will he play a show? And I'm like, yes, I would love to.
Yeah, yeah.
How long's the show? 3 hours. Ugh.
Ooh.
I got to learn 3 hours worth of songs. Honestly, it's not, especially now, it's like, it's not that bad. I probably have 6 or 7 hours worth of songs I could do.
Okay, I was going to ask, what's it like for playing for 3 hours? Because I know what it's like doing an hour of a podcast, but like 3 hours of music.
You just got to switch it up. Big thing that I always tell people is, like, on the off chance that I get asked for any advice, it's like, don't play a bunch of slow songs in a row. Mm. And just stuff like that. I try to begin and end on songs that people know. I'll throw in a couple originals in each set, but at the end of the day, it doesn't feel like 3 hours.
It goes fast.
Yeah. Especially because I'll do an hour, and then I'll take my break, and then I'll do another hour, take my break, and then I'll finish it off.
Okay.
And it's pretty much, I'm not playing like, okay, I'm doing this for 3 hours. I'm like, okay, I got an hour. And then I'll take my break, say hi to some people.
I see what you're saying. You break it up mentally, so it's not like such a big undertaking, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense.
And I'm having fun doing it, so it's not like, oh, God, these 3 hours are dragging.
That's true.
It's like, all right, what songs haven't I played in a while? You know, what kind of crowd is this? And the whole time, you're just kind of feeling the crowd, and it's cool to kind of see somebody vibe into one song, and you're like, oh, they like that Allman Brothers. Maybe try some CCR, maybe? I don't know. It's not two groups that I would usually associate with one another, but it's like, for whatever reason, if you like one, you tend to know the other one.
So you get a feel for it while you're up there.
They're like, oh, they like 80 straight. They might like some Alan Jackson, stuff like that.
Wow. It's a lot going on up there. I mean, you're not just performing, but you're also planning like your next moves.
Yeah.
What you're going to play next, yeah.
And then after I played that country club, it was kind of like I was able to, I looked up online, like, how do you send like cold emails to people to get booked and stuff? And they were like, mention your upcoming gigs so they know you're actually like a gigging musician. So I was like, you know, the next place I emailed, I was like, hey, I'm a musician. I'll be playing this place on this date. I'd love to set up a date to come play at your venue. And that worked out. And then we kind of, I want to say it was between October and December of 2021, I played like 6 gigs. And they were feelers. They were like, mm-hmm. you know, let's see if I like doing this. Am I actually as good as I would like to think I am? You know, because if I'm trash and people are not responding, like, okay, maybe this ain't for me. But the people responded really well. And it kind of, it turned into playing 6 to 8 gigs a month. And then after a while, my girlfriend at the time, she's now my wife, we both kind of realized that I'm not the best at booking.
Okay.
Because I'd be like, okay, I got a gig next Saturday. And she'd be like, oh, we got plans next Saturday. I'm like,
you sound like me.
Great.
With the podcast.
So we got this, it's called Time Tree app, where it's like a shared calendar on your phone.
Okay.
We put everything in there. So it's like, if she's got to do a Saturday thing for work, I know that. And, you know, it's color coded. And since then, she's taken over the booking, and it has gone so much smoother. And it got to a point where it was like, you know, 14, 16 gigs a month. And it was like, holy shit, holy I can't do this. And I was talking to Dave Gates on his podcast, because he's one of those, like, quantity gig people. I think he said he played over 200 shows 1 year. I couldn't do it. Like, after a couple months of doing, like, 14 to 16 a month, it's like, this is... My fingers hurt from playing.
Yeah.
My voice is killing me. Like, I feel like I'm not putting on as much of a quality show when I'm doing that many of them because I'm losing my voice and stuff. But yeah, it just took off. So at the beginning of 2022, I really started doing it like full time.
And what's your wife's first name?
Mackenzie.
Mackenzie. Shout out to Mackenzie. Wow. I mean, that's awesome because you need that support.
Thank you, baby.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly, yeah. I mean, because it is. It's all about the people around you and supporting you, because without them, it's tough. You know what I mean? Without strong base and strong support, whether it's, you know, parents or wife or significant other, friends even, you know what I mean? It's like if they mm-hmm. believe in you, if you can get them to believe in you, and I think they'll be the straightest shooters with you. Like if you're not good or it's not sounding right, like, they'll tell you straight up, you know?
Oh, yeah, and I ask her that all the time. Like, what do you think of this song? She's like, I like this one better. Okay, cool. Or, like, I'm doing, okay, so for my next single, I'm like, I have this one that I've been planning as my next single, but I wrote the chorus to one, and I was like, you know, what do you think will be better for the next single? The one that I have or the one that here's the chorus to, but I think I can flesh out in time to make it a single? And she's like, I think the new one. So I ended up fleshing that out, and we're working on recording it right now, so it's going to be my next single. But
Kenzie's a shot caller.
Oh yeah, she's for
like,
sure, man.
Where we're going, yeah, I like it.
My music's actually kind of how we started talking.
Yeah, tell me.
So I put out songs that got me here, back in 2020, I think it was, and on that is a song called "Dust on the Road," which is about moving back home. And she moved away to California for 5 years and had just recently moved back home after COVID. During COVID, sorry. And she really connected with that song. And we had, like, in passing been like, you know, hey, you know, liking each other's photos and stuff. I think I made a post about like, hey, give me some of your favorite songwriters. And she put on there about a guy named Ray Fulcher. So we kind of connected through his music. And then when I came out with that album, she heard Dust on the Road and she sent me a video of her wearing my t-shirt. Cause I, you know, I put an album out. I got to have t-shirts.
Yeah. You gotta. Yeah.
But
merch,
she, yeah, right. Exactly. But she bought a t-shirt and she sent me a video of her wearing the t-shirt, singing along to the song. And I showed it to my buddy, and this is at like midnight or something like that. And I was working the overnight shift at the hospital, and I showed it to my best friend, and I was like, am I overthinking this? Is she like, should I shoot my shot? And he's like, basically, I think she just shot her shot, bro.
Sounds like,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I think she did.
Yeah.
But yeah, it worked out. We're married now, so.
It all worked out.
Yeah.
That's wild, because I did listen to some of your music, and that album, Songs That Got Me Here, some of the songs I really liked, Till Morn, Dust on the Road I had on there, Always and Devil were the songs that I really liked. But you wrote, I believe, a single, Waking Up to a Dream. Talk a little bit about that, since we're talking about Mackenzie and everything.
Definitely. So I proposed in November of, let me get my dates right here. I think it was 2023. Nope, November 2022. Nope. I'm mixing up my years. I'm so sorry, man.
It's all good.
God, I got to do my math. Would you believe I was a math major?
No.
I'm struggling.
Dude, I'm bad at math, Jake. I'm real bad, so I can't help you there. But
we got married in 23, so I proposed in 22. Okay, November 22.
Right. Okay. Time flies, dude. I don't blame. I mean, really, it does.
Yeah. Like, man, we've been married like over a year now. This is awesome. Time's flying.
Time flies, yeah. I'm 7 years in, and it's crazy, like my wife and I can't believe it. But, oh, anyway, so back, October, what date in October?
We got married on the 15th.
Dang, man, one day off from the best day.
Yeah?
October 14th, my birthday.
Oh, that's awesome,
No,
man.
But that's crazy. So the 15th, it's a great day. It's a special day. You guys get married. This song, Waking Up to a Dream, that has to draw inspiration from your wedding or something. Like, tell me about that.
Oh, no, directly. So
directly,
we,
yeah.
Yeah, we got engaged in November of the year prior, and I had been wanting to write a song about the proposal. And it was like, when I set this song up, like when I tell people the story when I live, it's like, I know exactly how I felt in that moment. Like, I'm shaky, I'm nervous, I don't want to like give off any hints, but also, I got to get my shit together right now.
Yeah.
But like, I'm about to ask this woman to marry me. I'm in my feels. I'm like, it's a little cold, so I'm even shakier.
Mm-hmm.
Like we went up to Jim Thorpe, and it was a place called the 100-Mile View. And literally, you drive up the mountain, and then there's a place to park, and you have to walk the rest of the way. And you get up there, and you walk out of like, you know, the forest and whatnot, and it's like, clear from like left to right, as far as you can see, it just distance and towns. Like, you can see really far out there, like, oh, there's a football field in that town way out there,
yeah,
and stuff like that. And we've been back a couple times since, and unfortunately, they're like developing it now, and it's like a campground, and they're adding like a winery and a development and all that. But we still go back up there just to like check it out. We actually went last weekend up to see it because we went to see Ian Munsick up at Penn's Peak.
Okay.
So while we were there, let's check out the spot. But we get up there, and it's 100 miles, and I'm shaking. And I'm just like, I want to be able to capture how I felt in that moment. And I want to be able to capture, you know, asking her parents for their blessing and stuff like that. Just everything about it from my point of view. And that's what Waking Up to a Dream is. It's saying, like, you know, I'm weak in the knees, feel like my heart's bursting at the seams. I'm like, that's how I felt.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, if I put this out, I want to do it justice. I don't want to like half-ass this song. So my favorite pedal steel player in like, you know, modern country right now is Harrison Yount. He plays for Cody Johnson. So I reached out to him, and he played pedal steel on it. Wow. We got Mike Rogers on drums, who played with Craig Morgan, Ricky Skaggs, and Kentucky Thunder, stuff like that. So made sure to bring in the best possible people I could for this stuff. And then my guy, Troy Angle, who plays and produces all my music. He lays everything down and just makes everything fit. And I just feel like the feel of that song fit the story so perfectly. And I don't think I would have changed anything about the writing, proposing, or anything like that. I do want to tell a funny story now that I thought of it.
Go for it.
Yeah. She's probably going to get mad at me for saying this.
She's in the car. We're good.
I'm going to tell her when we get out there. Yeah, I told him that story. Right before we get up the mountain, there's a gas station at the bottom of the mountain. We stop there. I'm pumping gas. I get in, and she shows me a Facebook meme that's like, all my friends are getting engaged, and I'm over here getting, like, farted on or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Meanwhile, I'm driving up to propose to her.
Right.
And then when we're done, of course, I'm crying. Like I said, I cry a lot.
Yeah.
So I was emotional. Crying. Yeah. I'm like, so about that post, and we just started geeking.
That's wild.
It was the timing couldn't have been more perfect.
Yeah, seriously.
I tried to play it cool too, because like, I feel like she maybe got turned on a little bit to like, is he gonna engage on this trip? But she was like, should I get my nails done?
Oh.
I was like, you ain't gonna get me.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you want to, babe. I don't think you need to.
Right.
Knowing full well she's getting her nails done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I don't seem like I'm pushing it too hard, maybe I won't, you know, give it up. Anyway, yeah, that's about the song.
That's the song. No, man, that's awesome. Yeah, let's take a quick snack break. This snack break is brought to you by Jerky Beef Jerky. When late night editing episodes for the podcast, Jerky Beef Jerky keeps me fueled and ready to go with 11 grams of protein, high quality ingredients, and no nitrates or nitrites. With 5 different flavors to choose from, Jerky Beef Jerky. Eat, meat, repeat. So to pick back up, when you're writing songs, like Waking Up to a Dream, you know, Dust on the Road, what is that process like? Do you lock yourself in your room and just play in that way? Do you go out on a rocking chair? Do you sit by a fire? Like, how is the writing process? Do you always find it interesting? And where do you draw, like, inspiration from?
I mean, really, I draw inspiration from about anything. I have, like, in my phone, I have in my notes. And if I think of, like, a word I want to put in a song, if I think of a line, if I come up with, like, a couple lines to a song that I want to, like, flesh out later, like, it's just this note has been a note in my phone for as long as I can remember, and I can just go in there and pull from it. Excuse me. So,
are you good? Yeah.
When I wrote As a Rambler Goes with Cody Tyler, that's a song that I had not in my notes, but I had half written. It was like a verse and a chorus. And I've always loved Cody's songwriting. So when we set up a co-write, I was like, well, I got to bring my A game. So I went through all these notes and everything that kind of like fit together or felt like something that we could do cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we have a lot of commonalities in our music. So anything that kind of had that overlap, I put into a different note. And that note itself was still like a super long note. So, you know, it was like, we can draw from any of this to start fresh. We can draw from, I think I went with like 3 or 4 songs that I had, like a verse and a chorus.
Yeah.
Just on the off chance that like we could start from scratch. We might be able to finish one of these. You know, what are you feeling? And one of those was As a Rambler Goes. And then it could be something as simple as like I was out letting my dog out in the morning and I came up with a couple lines to a chorus and I fleshed that out into a song. Or I fleshed out the chorus and the first verse as soon as I got inside, and then a week later I finished it. And then Dust on the Road, I wrote that in Fort Sam Houston. I was just missing home really bad, and I just wrote down in a notebook everything I was missing about home. And I was like, okay, how can I bring all this together into a song? Till Morn, I wrote on the weather deck of the ship.
Really?
Yeah, I was like listening to some Kip Moore or something like that, and I was like, just got like the melody in my head, like dun da dun 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 da dun 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 dun. And I'm thinking, I'm like, baby, the night's still young. I didn't have plans to take. And it just kind of worked its way out. So I really can't say I have a process. Sometimes, you know, little things just come to me, as John Mayer-y as that sounds.
Yeah, right.
And I do my best to kind of flesh it out. And like, I always have my notes or like my list of, you know, ideas to kind of fall back on. Like,
right.
Oh, that word fits with, you know, the theme of this song or something like that.
Yeah. It just kind of a mishmash of things. I found a lot of creatives I talked to who have been on the podcast use the Notes app a ton on their phone, and I use it. I use the same thing. I do it too. You know, it's just, it's there. It's so handy. So talking about like collaborations, you know, most recently with Cody Tyler, and he was on the podcast episode 82 for the listeners that might be new and haven't listened to it, but he talks about what he calls this area, Pennsyltucky, calls it, you know, Pennsyltucky. And he reminds me, I told him this when I saw him, but he reminds me of like Pennsylvania's Post Malone. I don't know, just his mannerisms, the way he acts, which I really like Post Malone myself. So I'm not trying to insult.
Oh no, yeah, Post is awesome. I think
he's very talented, but that's the kind of vibe I get from Cody, just kind of that vibe. And, you know, the state here in PA is just, or Pennsyltucky, as he calls it, is just so loaded with this hidden talent, you know, people like yourself, Jess Zimmerman Band, you know, Sam Stinson. It's like, there's so much talent here. How did you two, you just always been like kind of a fan, he was a fan of your work, and how did that like really come together then?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for putting me in that list. That means a lot. Thank you.
Yeah.
Really, so when I was moving home, somehow I came across the CPMAs, the Central Pennsylvania Music Awards, and I was like, okay, so these are, you know, I'm looking at the country category, like, so these are going to be, like, if I end up being able to do music, these are going to be my peers and stuff like that. So, you know, guys like Nathan Maravich, at the time it was like Garrett Schultz, and then Cody Tyler and Grant Bryan and stuff like that. Jess Zimmerman Band, obviously, like they're names that I saw, and I was like, okay, well, I got to check these people out. And right around this time was when Cody put out his Stare Your Demons Down album. I told my, again, girlfriend at the time, but now she's my wife. I told her, I was like, this guy's stuff is just like amazing. Like, dude's got a voice like a diesel engine.
He does, yeah.
But then he can do stripped down acoustic stuff just as good, if not better. And it's like, there's so much versatility in his music. So I've always been a fan of his music. And I think I got nominated for Best Male Country Artist the first year I did it. So it was 2022 that was my first year doing music. So this would have been the awards in 23.
Okay.
So I got nominated for Best Male Country Artist. Obviously, it's my first year. I'm not expecting to win this. But I like getting dressed up.
Yeah?
So, yeah. So we went to the awards and stuff like that. I saw Cody there, and I was like, I think I want to say something to him. But he ended up that year winning best country band and album of the year. Yeah. So I was like, yeah, that makes sense. That album is fire.
Mm-hmm.
And he's getting swarmed with people. So I was kind of like, not only was I intimidated, I was also like, he's busy. You know, I might catch up with him some other time.
Yeah.
And then the following year, he reached out to me. He was doing the Keystone Country Fest at Windridge Farm in Dallas Town. And he reached out to me, and I was like, you know, when someone you're a fan of is like, hey, you want to come play an event I'm putting on? Holy shit.
Yeah, yeah.
He wants me? Yeah, absolutely, man.
That's awesome. Okay.
So that's kind of how we got plugged together. And I really don't think we texted much other than that until the following year's CPMAs. When I think we were both up for the same awards. I don't think he won anything. I know I didn't win anything. But at the after party, I saw him there, and it was at the Englewood, and they were doing karaoke. And we signed up to do Should Have Been a Cowboy.
Okay, yeah.
So we're sitting there, like, first of all, it was awesome, because you get to see so many local musicians just go up there and shred. And he did a cover of Rooster by Alice in Chains. Incredible. Like I said, voice like a diesel engine. He was just, yeah.
Oh, I bet, like, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so we hung out at that, and that was really the first time we actually kind of hung out together. And after that, we just, you know, texting here and there, and then we sent memes on Instagram and stuff like that, and before you know it, it's like, we're friends. Hey, any chance you want to do a co-write? I want to put something out, and I love your writing. Would you want to do a co-write? So we did that, and then we kind of hyped ourselves up, and we were like, oh my God, I'm so excited. And I knew going in there, I don't think he knew this, but when I went in, I was like, if we come out of this with a song and I record it, I want to feature him. Like, I want us to like do this together. I want to put it out together, because nobody's doing collaborations locally.
No.
And I feel like we need to. And I want to say, he said it best. What is it? Rising tides raise all ships. like people think we're all fighting for like a piece of the pie. It's like, dude, like we're all out here trying to get gigs, but we're all out here trying to succeed. But if we collaborate, your fans now get to know who I am. My fans get to know who you are.
100%.
And you know, it was just such a cool thing. And since then, we've been, you know, doing gigs together. We did the Flannel Fest at Winridge Farm. We just did like a song swap for 4 hours. We did the show up in Harrisburg a couple weeks ago. He put out a song called Harper's Ferry, which inspired me and my wife to go visit Harper's Ferry. And now, I think we announced this already, we're playing a gig down in Harper's Ferry.
Really?
Yeah. And I told him, I was like, dude, you can get a video of Harper's Ferry live from Harper's Ferry. He's like, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Dude, that would have been the first thing I thought of.
Right, right.
I was hyped for you when we had that idea.
See, and that's I love that mentality because I'm the same way. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't look at other podcasts as we're competing. It's let's collab, let's work together because your audience is different than my audience.
Yeah.
Your views, your style is different than mine. So let's collab so then we can all succeed. You know, we can all grow.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I look at it for sure. Yeah.
And especially since then, that was like, I had been wanting to do co-writes for a while. And my first co-write I ever did was with my producer, Troy Angle, and we wrote Hours Counting Minutes. My second co-write was As a Rambler Goes with Cody Tyler.
Yeah.
And then since then, I've written with, like, me, Cody, and Bobby Law all wrote a song together.
Okay.
Called Cut a Deal. I wrote a song with Ellie Cook, Willoughby Hayes, this guy Mac Berry. I just wrote a song last week with Jake Groft.
No, I never heard of that one.
He's out of, like, Hanover, McSherrystown area.
Okay. A little south of here.
Yeah. A little outside, like, the hour and a half radius.
Yeah.
That's where I tend to keep when I'm booking gigs. You know, we tend to, if we're going to be driving home that night, we try to keep it within an hour and a half.
That makes sense. So, like, storytelling is a huge part of country music. You know, and a lot of people have described you as perfectly suited for storytelling. You know, your voice and your inflections and everything. So, like, what is maybe an example from your life or someone else's that you've then turned into a song that you're particularly proud of?
So I had a buddy of mine was going through a very bad divorce, and I was with him like the whole time through it, and I felt, you know, horrible for him. And at the same time is when I started talking to Ken's. So it's like I had gotten out of a relationship a couple years prior, and it was one of those things where like I wasn't looking like, oh, I got to get a girlfriend. It was just kind of like I'm living my life, and me and Ken's just kind of happened upon each other, and things were really, you know, starting to go good for me. And I was seeing a future with this girl. And at the same time, my buddy's going through this really bad divorce. So it was kind of like, I don't want to, like, you know, throw a great relationship at you while you're going through all this. But when I was doing Valley Tapes, I really wanted to like put a song on there that was my way of saying like, you're going to be okay. Obviously, I hadn't gone through a bad divorce. You know, I wasn't, you know, as in dire straits as he was at the time, but it was like the best thing in my life that I have came to me when I wasn't looking for it. And that turned into my song, Looking. And while it wasn't like his story to a T, it was kind of like a narrative I had written about somebody that was just kind of like down on his luck. He was at rock bottom and he happened upon somebody. And that was my way of saying like, bro, it's going to be all right. It happened to me, not as bad, but it happened to me, and it's going to happen to you. You just got to be patient. So that turned into Looking.
Okay. And that was on the Valley Tapes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What are some future plans for your music career? What do you got going on? Is there something you can tease? What's going on? Where can people find you?
So I'm on Facebook at Jake Mache Singer Songwriter. Everywhere else is Jake Mache Music, and then jakemache.com. I'm looking to have an album out in September.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's going to have all my singles I've had since the Valley Tapes EP. Plus, I'm looking for about 4 or 5 more on top of that. So all in all, it should be about 12 songs.
Nice. Wow, so, that's a good album.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited. We started recording on it. We should have about 3 songs to go after this round of songs gets through. Yeah. We do them a few at a time.
Okay.
You know, I don't want to sit Troy and be like, hey, here's 6 songs I want to have done by September. You know, I'll do the next, right now I'm doing the next single and a gospel cover I'm doing for BBS sorry, at my church.
Yeah,
she asked me to do a cover of something, and I was like, well, I could do a cover and I'll throw it on the album. So,
oh, nice.
So he's working on those two right now. And then I think we have about three more.
Okay.
After that.
So when you go for like to put out an album, is there a place you go to record? Like, do you go down to Nashville? Is there like a local place you go and record? I'm just curious.
Yeah. No, so I record with Troy Engel. He's from my hometown. He's a huge bluegrass guy. And whenever people ask about my sound, like my music would not sound at all how it does without Troy. Like Troy really, he's the fiddle, he's okay. The mandolin, the baritone guitar, the banjo, the like all of it. Like he really turns these songs into, he gets them from me and my acoustic guitar onto the recording so well. Like everything that I wish my music could be is what he does with it, and I couldn't be happier with it.
Shout out to Troy.
Yeah, huge shout out to Troy.
Yeah. So before we close out, Jake, is there anything else you want to talk about that I might not be aware of or that we didn't cover?
I don't think so. I feel like I bounced around a lot during this whole interview, so I think I got a lot.
We covered a lot, that's for sure. We covered a lot, and overall, no, I'm happy with it. I think it turned out real well. And, yeah, I look forward to following your music career. We're connected on Instagram and everything, and, you know, just learning and watching and seeing, you know, what you do.
Thank you, man.
Because I love supporting local. That's what it's all about, you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. If Pennsylvania is the next up-and-coming kind of like Nashville for talent and music, I'm all for it.
It definitely is. Like how Cody said it, it is a treasure trove. I feel like people don't look at, you know, Amish country, Pennsylvania, and think like, oh, I bet there's a lot of good country music there. But like, man, the second you look, it is a find. Like there is so much. Between like Cody, Jess Zimmerman Band, Ellie Cook, Drew Cook, there's just so much awesome country music to be found, and really it's just getting eyes.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, once people look, they're gonna see. It's just trying to get them to look is the tough part when Nashville is screaming so loud.
But people like yourself and you know, the people you just named are doing a phenomenal job. It's only a matter of time. You know I think once one pops off, you know, then it's gonna flow, you know?
Oh, yeah. And I think there's something special about it being homegrown, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you go to Nashville and it's people flying in from everywhere in the country, different, all over the world, you know, really. So, you know, you could be talking to somebody and they're from, like, you know, California or something like that. But there's just something special about, like, you know, I got a good buddy down the road who makes some amazing country music and he grew up here. Or she grew up here, and you know what I mean? It's just having that homegrown connection. It's like, man, all that really came out of here, and it wasn't, you know, sent in from somewhere. Nobody flew in to come do this here.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like these people really have, you know, the same values and are writing about the exact same stuff I'm writing about.
Yeah, it's real. You know what I mean? It's here. It's lived experiences, maybe.
Yeah.
That's a good way to look at it. Yeah. All right, man. Well, I'm gonna wrap it up.
Cool.
Cool. Jake Maish, singer and songwriter, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, man. It was an awesome time.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. To see photos of today's guests and more content, just search American Grown Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to be a featured guest on the podcast, please direct message or email Austin at AmericanGrownPod@gmail.com.
This episode was brought to you by these sponsors.
Modern Gent Customs is your go-to for all your custom apparel and headwear needs. From individuals to businesses, with no minimums or design fees ever, inquire today at info@moderngentcustoms.com.
Cleona Coffee Roasters is a small batch coffee roastery and coffee shop. Veteran and first responder owned, community-oriented, and roasted fresh to order. Now open inside 911 Rapid Response, Anvil, PA. Go to CleonaCoffeeRoasters.com to order online, see updated hours, and find where you can buy it close to you.
Hostler Engraving is your local source for unique, quality-driven laser-engraved gifts for all occasions. Place an order today by visiting our Facebook page at Hostler Engraving. You won't be disappointed.
Triggered 22 LLC. A veteran-owned apparel company. By purchasing a t-shirt, hat, or hoodie from Triggered 22, you're not only supporting a small business, but you're bringing awareness to veteran PTSD and suicide. Please help save the lives of those who fought for our freedoms. Visit Triggered 22 CoffeeShop.com now and place your order. Let's help those suffering from invisible wounds.